alone and to return to his country. All human beings are born free and equal in dignity and rights. They are endowed with reason and conscience and should act towards one another in a spirit of brotherhood. Motherhood and childhood are entitled to special care and assistance. All children, whether born in or out of wedlock, shall enjoy the same social protection. The family is the natural and fundamental group unit of society and is entitled to protection by society and the state. Everyone has the right to freedom of thought, conscience, and religion. This right includes freedom to change his religion or belief, and freedom, either alone or in community with others and in public or private, to manifest his religion or belief in teaching, practice, worship, and observance. Everyone has the right to own property alone as well as in association with others. No one shall be arbitrarily deprived of his property. Everyone is entitled to a social and international order in which the rights and freedoms set forth in this declaration can be fully realized. Everyone has the right to education. Parents have a prior right to choose the kind of education that shall be given to their children. Everyone has the right to freedom of opinion and expression. This right includes freedom to hold opinions without interference and to seek, receive, and impart information and ideas through any media and regardless of frontiers. Everyone has the right to freedom of peaceful assembly and association. No one may be compelled to belong to an association. Nothing in this declaration may be interpreted as implying for any state, group, or person any right to engage in any activity or to perform any act aimed at the destruction of any of the rights and freedoms set forth herein. No one shall be subjected to arbitrary interference with his privacy, family, home, or correspondence, nor to attacks upon his honor and reputation. Everyone has the right to the protection of the law against such interference or attacks. Everyone has the right to seek and to enjoy in other countries asylum from persecution. This right may not be invoked in the case of prosecutions genuinely arising from non-political crimes or from acts contrary to the purposes and principles of the United Nations. 173 people accused, 74 charged and tried in court, 8 perpetrators lawfully sentenced to unsuspended imprisonment, 22 perpetrators lawfully sentenced to suspended imprisonment.
Thank you. Thank you for presenting these slides, which show almost ideal totalitarianism, or let us say, Orwellian newspeak in action. Justice means violence, and peace means war. But let us start with our first panel, and we have 8 panelists here, and also several outstanding personalities who have indicated their interest to take the floor. As a leader of this panel, I need to be rather strict, and we have decided that the panelists will speak for maximum 7 minutes to afford enough possibilities for participants on the floor to take part, which is our purpose. But first, it's my pleasure to introduce Pavel Zarchek, from the Institute for the Study of Totalitarian Regimes, and it is Czech Republic. Please.
Vážené dámy, vážení pánové, vážení přátelé, je mi ctí při této vzácné příležitosti prezentovat ideu, kterou se v poslední době intenzivně zabýváme. Společnou evropskou platformou překonávání pozůstatků naší totalitní minulosti. Jde nejen o jedno z klíčových témat naší nedávné historie, jde o náš přístup k totalitním hnutím.
Sorry, we're having a little bit of a problem. Just a moment.
Na základě našich znalostí, které sebou nesou příslušnou zodpovědnost, jsme povinni spolu vytvářet podmínky, které zajistí, aby se v Evropě totalitní viry v takové míře jako ve 20.
Okay, we've got you now. Never. In the 20th century in Europe can this occur? An important condition is international cooperation. We all realize how difficult it is to achieve concrete results in researching certain totalitarian regimes. Therefore, it is all the more difficult to create what we think is absolutely necessary, the common platform in the EU, so as to enable exchange, coordination, and a common attitude towards totalitarian regimes. It is clear that other views and other priorities exist, as in the Czech Republic and in Poland, and in the post-communist countries, the transformation was very great. However, the situation of 1990 still exercises influence. This was a very strong experience. However, we can also learn from the Federal Republic of Germany when talking about overcoming the past. A completely different approach was taken by Spain, Italy, and France. We are obliged to seek joint points, a joint platform, so as to encourage public discussion from Greece to the Baltic Republics. It is our common interest to do so. Therefore, it is important to speak of common European experiences via the platform of European memory and conscience. We realize that it is necessary to engage in certain international projects, for example, common policies in this question. It will also make possible free access to various archives on totalitarian regimes, on ideologically motivated criminals, and so forth. Also discussions on the reasons for totalitarian movements could lead to a higher level of considerations. And at the same time, we would have accompanying projects for further training and educational projects. Also important are museums and institutes. With the help of this platform, we can strengthen national institutes, particularly those who are unique in the post-communist countries. They are very important. In the Czech Republic, these platforms are considered to be a most important pillar, and within the framework of the EU presidency, this event and the entire discussion in the European Parliament has been initiated and supported. We realize that it's not possible during a 6-month presidency to solve all problems. We know that it is our task to begin this process and see to it that it is later on continued by our successors. The beginning may be the establishment of an information office in Brussels, which could be a core cell for information in Europe and would enable an exchange of information so as to strengthen these platforms. We have engaged in a series of consultations and workshops in November last year in Prague. That was very important. And we are seeking new solutions which will lead and support the Common Declaration. So may I once again welcome you and welcome you as organizers of this event, and I hope that this event will promote our ideals. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Zajcik. I'll remember your proposals. And now it's my pleasure to welcome representative of the European Commission, DG for Justice, Freedom and Security, Mr. Emmanuel Krabit. Please.
Merci, Monsieur le Président, et merci aussi.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the Czech Presidency for having organized this hearing. Since time is short, I'd briefly like to explain the procedure that the Commission has undertaken. On the 8th of April 2008, about a year ago, for the first time, the European institutions held a hearing on the topic of the crimes committed by totalitarian regimes. The hearing was organized by the Commission under Slovenian presidency and had been called for by the Council of Justice and Home Affairs. It was an important hearing. For the first time, this topic had been dealt with by the European institutions. This gave a very rich debate, and the Slovenian presidency made a publication which is very big in its content. And I can recommend its reading because it's very rich and it puts forward many future proposals. But I would like to point out two main facts that arose from this hearing on the 8th of April. Firstly, that there is an obvious lack of recognition by Western European states, Union states, of the tragedy suffered by the states in the East. So awareness raising must occur so that such a terrible history is not forgotten and should unite us. European history has to be shared by all, and there is an important task to be done by all there. Now, the second thing I would like to point out is the lack of a common approach to deal with the memory of totalitarian crimes. For instance, a Greek expert explained that the archives in Greece had been destroyed. And this, for the German expert, was quite unbelievable, because the access to archives is extremely regulated in Germany. So there is a very different approach to the treatment of the memory of totalitarian crimes. The organization of the hearing was not in itself an objective. The main aim was to present a report on the subject and the possible initiatives that the European Union could undertake in this respect. It was the Council of Justice that asked for this report to be drafted, and it will be drafted in 2010. The Council of Justice said that the report would be published 2 years after the declaration on xenophobia adopted in 2008. The report is of extreme importance for us because it will allow for a political debate in the Council of the European Union and in the European Parliament. So now in the Commission we are in the process of drafting this report. We have started a study to describe the different methods that have been used in the different member states to deal with this topic. matters of justice, concerning victims, also the treatment of persons that have committed a certain crime, but also aspects of awareness raising, institutional aspects, and the study we have started to draft has as a name to cover all the whole scope of approaches that are used in the different states to deal with this subject matter. And this will allow us to elaborate our report, which will be presented in 2010. The study that has just started will be completed at the end of 2009. And now let me have a look at the ideas that are debated today in the hearing. I think all the ideas that are dealt with today were presented in the Prague Declaration, and these ideas are going to be examined in our report. The idea is of a platform of different institutions, of different states, seems a positive way of dealing with this topic, because we realize that on the 8th of April, that there is a lack of awareness, but also different methods between the different, amongst the different member states of treating or dealing with this information. So this platform would be definitely very useful to deal with this topic, and the Commission definitely supports the creation of such a platform. The Commission will examine the idea to see how, within its competences, it could contribute to the setting up of such a platform. And I would like to conclude by saying that the Commission is determined to carry out this process. We have heard the fears that after the hearing in 2008, the process would just die out, but the proof that it hasn't is today's meeting, and it will surely continue in the future. But the European Union in this field has very few competences, but it doesn't mean that it can't play a role. It can, on the contrary. And it can promote and encourage the exchange of national experiences on this topic. We feel that this is truly essential, and all the ideas that are going to be presented here today will be examined in detail in the framework of the preparation of our report. Thank you very much.
Merci beaucoup, Monsieur Krabi.
Thank you very much.
We need to appreciate our good start of cooperation with the European Commission. And in spite of the fact that, as Commission has declared, they don't have or they don't think to have much competence, they will have a very important coordinating role. And therefore, we are encouraged by your report, and we look forward to the final report presented by the Commission. And next, it's my pleasure to give the floor to Emanuel Zingeris, who is representing International Commission for the Evaluation of the Crimes of the Nazi and Soviet Occupation Regimes in Lithuania. Please, Emanuelis.
Thank you, Virginia.
Microphone.
Thank you, Tunia. Here we are presenting a group of enthusiasts who were related to the story of last 2 years, that we are trying to revitalize the idea to bring both totalitarian regimes, Nazi and Soviet, back to the discussion on the European Union level. And I would like to say thank you very much for all sides involved, especially European Commission, who are now preparing the final overview. Thank you, first of all, for our Czech friends who now continue their evaluation, and especially Madam Hibaskova. She was always very active during the last hearings. But coming back to the core of the issue, I think we should say basic things what was said informally, basically. It's basically not issue of left and right in European Union countries. It should be not an issue between Social Democrats and APP groups in here in European Parliament. It's issue of the fate of our nations, of millions of victims. Talking about our friends Social Democrats, I remember my hometown Vilnius. The first victims were killed in Vilnius town by NKVD from 1940, were representative of Bund, the leaders of Social Democratic Party. So in this case, it's we have this issue in European Union debates, and from time to time we have some results who it's impossible to understand. You know, we are still pending Markov case in Bulgaria. And that shows that still memory of the victims is alive in our court. Still we have, for example, few weeks ago in Slovenia discovered mass graves for people killed after Second World War in Slovenia by local communist regime, by Tito regime. And we have some, you know, changes in governments, and from time to time one government is trying to put down the historical truth. You know, and I would like not mention those issues, well, today is not a case, but we should overcome the idea that former nomenklatura people who were related to those regimes can influence our free elected European scene. That's very important to say. Actually, talking about Lisbon Treaty, the European Union is founded on the values of respect for human dignity, liberty, democracy, equality, the rule of law, and respect for human rights, and seeks to promote commitment of those values. Notably, under Lisbon Treaty, the European Union Charter of Fundamental Rights acquires a legally binding status. It is particularly important that the Charter attached great importance to the protection of the rights to human dignity, which was proclaimed as the basis of human rights as far back as in 1948 when the Universal Declaration of Human Rights was proclaimed. Actually, I remember last debate with our partners in the European Commission and our Spanish friends from Spain. Talking, you know, about Franco regime and Stalin regime, trying to make parallels. The Spanish delegation were telling to us, gentlemen, it's very important to remember victims. I absolutely agree. We should remember victims who still exist among us. We have victims of those regimes. I'm actually, my family related to Holocaust. My mother spent 4 years in a German concentration camp. We remember the dignity of Holocaust victims. We try to overcome and fight the denial of Holocaust. And that's very good. We should strengthen those values in the European Union. But why we should be silent about the totalitarian regimes? I would like to mention even at least last example who is still on our table. We are still pending our diplomatic negotiation with friendly Italian government to give back our former embassy building, taken by Mussolini and later giving to Joseph Stalin. So it's still everything alive. So I think we should be as active as possible to look from our not party, but our national interest to strengthen the issue of evaluation of the past and commission. Our commission was actually empowered by the decision of the head of state to start the process of implementation of evaluation of totalitarian regimes, started to do that. But we hope that the end will be of this overview will be changes of education in European Union countries, changes in the law conditions. Actually, we have in Lithuania law who prohibited the use of Nazi and Soviet symbols in, during the demonstrations in the streets. So we think the I absolutely agree with my Jewish friends that we should not undermine the uniqueness of Holocaust. That's absolutely true. The gas chambers are not the same like gulags. Well, it was final solution created by Hitler Nazi group towards Jewish people. But the millions of victims of the Soviet regimes who present until now the horrible results that more like 10 countries in the European Union are still in line to be better, not talking about current crisis, but the why we are in such condition. Czechs, Slovaks, Lithuanians, Poles, Estonians, why we are still not on the same level like our Western friends. Well, we have pre-war time other start positions and we were frozen for 50 years. So in this case, I think from our side, we are absolutely on side of the common memory platform and conscience in Brussels. It's little step, but it should be done not in the future, but now, immediately. We're absolutely in favor of all actions from the Commission side, and we are strongly against from some governments' decision, for example, last decision by our dear friends in Slovenian government to cut the financial supply to study center for national reconciliation in Slovenia. I'm sorry to say it was doubtful and never using, you know, some examples, but in this time I would like to do that. Well, the people from Slovenian center were from beginning among us. They were involved in this, in during all presentations, and they were involved in this great book created by Slovenia. And we should be trying to strengthen all centers, academic centers who are working with communist evaluation of communist regimes. And finally, go to other side of the streets, go to law-making procedures, to vaccinate, to bring law-making procedures in European Parliament here up to the point if it's related to totalitarian regimes, and we cannot allow us to see during the radicalization and the streets up during the crisis that the symbols of those regimes will be back to the streets. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Emmanuelis, for bringing, testifying your personal experiences. And you are one of the very good persons to testify the message and cruelty of all totalitarian regimes, whether it be Nazi or the Soviet totalitarianism. And you are absolutely right declaring that it's not a left or right wing issue. It's this issue should unite us all in defense of human dignity and human memory. Thank you once more, and it's my pleasure to give the floor to Mr. Marius Oprea from Institute for the Investigation of the Communist Crime from Romania. Please.
My colleagues in Gary said, remember the victims, but I want to say also, don't forget the criminals. I think practically this is a purpose of our institute, because we try to find the criminals in Romania. I think we are with a step in front of you with that. We condemn the communism officially. Our president condemned the communism in December 2006 as a result of a special report made by a special commission. I was one of the members of that commission. We have in Romania, let's say, a common fight to find a lot of elements about the criminal nature of the communist regime. We have practically three institutions which are dedicated on that. First is the National Council for the Studying of the Securitate Archives. The representative of that council is there here. That Presidential Commission for the Analyzing the Communist Regime. As I told you, I was honored to be a member of that commission. The third is our Institute for the Investigation of the Communist Crimes in Romania. Yes, we discussed a lot about victims, about the nature of the communism. But for me and my employees, it's very hard to see what is mean that on the field. Practically, we start also to excavate the common graves, to find the people who was shot in the head by the Securitate. Our estimation is not a positive one for the Securitate. I think was more than 10,000 people who was killed illegally by the Securitate, shot, executed without any sentence. We had more than 1 million political prisoners. From those prisoners, more than 10% was killed during the detention. The dimension of the communist crimes in Romania, I think, was the biggest in all the former communist countries. Because of that, we start to have a common effort with those three institutions, and to find a way to modify also the penal code and to ask to the criminals to be in front of the justice. Because if we remain only basically to declare the communist as a criminal regime and to do not do anything against the criminals, to do not anything to help, practically help the victims with pensions. For example, we start also with our institute to have some initiatives in parliament. One of that those initiatives is to give the money to the sons and daughter to those who was killed illegally by the Securitate, a special pension. Another initiative is to cut the pensions of the former Securitate officers and the former activists who was involved in criminal activities. I think those kind of things, practical measures, must be took in our countries. And for that, I ask your permission to cut my intervention here and to let, after that, on the discussion to my friend Sorini Leșiu to present our proposal for that, to be considered by you, and to we can stay in a dialogue and to... Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. You propose to do it immediately?
No.
Afterwards, yes. Very, very good. And may we proceed with Herr Hans Altendorf from Deutschland, Office of the Federal Commissioner, please.
Thank you, Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of the responsible person for the Stasi archives, I should like to thank the Czech presidency for having held this hearing today. It shows that we are in the center of the European Union and discussing this subject. That is, that this subject has reached, that the message has been received. And strengthening this is in our interest today, in the context of today, but also in future discussions. Ever since 1991, our authorities have been responsible for treatment of the archives of the secret police of the former Eastern Europe, so as also to see to it that there is access to the archives and so as to present information to the public on what these secret police did. In the 90s, Germany was the only state in the European Union which had experience of over four decades of communist rule. With the entry of the Eastern and Middle European countries into the EU, there has been a great opportunity of 27 EU states. In their history, over decades, they were part of the Soviet ruling system. Therefore, chances have grown to see this subject as significant in European history and to study it and keep its memory alive. Within an initiative of 2004, the institutions in seven countries which treat these subjects, in 2008 they launched an initiative to create a European network for the authorities who are responsible for the archives of the secret police. Poland, the Czech Republic, Slovakia, Hungary and Bulgaria and Romania met in 2008 so as to initiate common cooperation in these matters. We signed a document and were very pleased that in Berlin the EU representation was able to implement this document. I wish to underscore and also point out that this network is not in competition with the European platform discussed today. The network established in Berlin is concentrating on a specific aspect in dictatorships. The participation there is the availability of the secret police archives, and the network does not have the subject and institutional claims which are discussed today at the platform. Germany, and I'm referring to a very sensitive point, looks back to two dictatorships in the 20th century. This also applies to some other countries represented here. And the question of how to treat these two regimes, the communist and the national socialist one, was in Germany the subject of a very heated debate. It's a very highly sensitive subject. A certain consensus was achieved in the federal cabinet as well as in the Bundestag last year with a concept for a memorial. This includes basic considerations which have to do with the memory of the NS terror and the communist dictatorship. In other words, this is specific to the German debate. And it is absolutely essential that the differences between the Nazi regime and the SED dictatorship be considered. The National Socialism in Germany caused millions because of its pursuit and its destruction policy. The memory of this terror will be determined by Holocaust, the systematic destruction of genocide of 6 million Jews is something which has never occurred. And in the German and European and worldwide culture of memory, this has singular significance. The National Socialist crimes against Russia and Poland also belong to our collective memory, just as the destruction of the Sinti and Roma and other people who have been pursued. And we also consider the SED culture and the victims of communism. And people lived behind walls and barbed wire for decades, and they were also subject to terror measures of the Eastern German secret police. And all memory in Germany must assume that neither the National Socialist crimes can be made relative, nor can the SED terror can be made something of minor importance. This is a document which was adopted by a large majority in the Parliament of the Federal Republic. And one will have noticed that in this text there is a differentiation in the type of wording used. On the one hand, the singularity of Holocaust is mentioned, and the fact that the National Socialist governed Germany began the Second World War. On the other hand, the reference to the communist dictatorship, the DDR, is not the Stalinist terror regime as a whole. This differentiation marks the memory political discussion in Germany. It is a precondition for broad acceptance of the memory and honor to the victims of both dictatorships. With reference to the decisions taken by the government and the parliament, we wish to point out that some initiatives, be they carried by Germany, must take this differentiation into consideration. Therefore, I would suggest that we strengthen the memory of the dictator systems and increase our discussions. We think it important to reconsider as to whether a research program ought to be carried out on the history of these dictatorships in Europe, and whether this could not be something successful so as to see to it that the entire European discussion on these dictatorships be studied so as to make up for what has been not yet studied thoroughly. And a second step, we ought to consider as to whether the German foundation for the work on the SED dictatorship, which was founded in 1998, we wonder if something could not be similar at European level so as the memory of the communist dictatorships could be brought to the forefront of European awareness. A European foundation for study of communist dictatorships could be something which could be financed in the long term and would also depend on independent experts' research and would be fairly independent. Because of the European communism theme, this would not give rise to any opposition, but would certainly be very important for the research in both communism and Nazi structures. Now, in addition to this concept, this foundation could study communist dictatorships in Europe as a whole by initiating Europe-wide projects and internetting them so as to pursue decentralized projects. Obviously, research and development is important, but there also should be educational programs which reach far into schools and the public at large. When thinking of the victims, comparative studies of dictatorships with totalitarian regimes could be a central task of such a foundation, which would work very closely together with other establishments which are working on national socialism. They could be partners in working through the history and the specific Eastern and Middle European experiences and therefore could be sustainable in the studies throughout Europe. I hope that these considerations can flow into our discussion, and may I make a remark on what is now being discussed in the European Parliament. I welcome the decision to establish a House of European History, which the Presidency of the European Parliament has apparently decided upon recently, and I think the subject we are discussing today also should take into consideration the establishment and the creation of such a House of history. I think that the crimes of the totalitarian regimes of Europe will certainly be part of what this house is all about. Thank you for having listened.
Vielen Dank, Herr Ottendorf. We'd like to thank you for very, very concrete proposals and mentioning that Germany too experienced two dictatorships. I think this is a very important chance for all nations of Central and Eastern Europe who have experienced both forms of totalitarianism. And of course we may differentiate between one and the other, but once again we need to be to assure and guarantee that human sufferings will be assessed equally, not regarding the nature of any regime. And now it's my pleasure to pass the word on to our Bulgarian colleague, Vasil Kadrinov, from Anna Arendt Center. Please.
Danke, Herr Vorsitzender.
Thank you, Chairman. I've come here today and I'm representing six Bulgarian citizens' organizations. We organized a conference in January in Sofia on communist crimes, and this was supported by the group of the European Parliament and also by the Konrad Adenauer Foundation. What we discussed was the proposal for the establishment of the European platform worked through by the Czech presidency, and I should like to inform you as to why we support this idea. May I briefly go into the history of communism in Bulgaria? Immediately after the entry of the Soviet army into Bulgaria in September 1944, the Bulgarian communists murdered some 30,000 people without any court procedure, without any reason. There was a wave of terror which spread through the country. It came from the outside, and this was the way and means for establishing a new totalitarian state. Thereafter, in the next few years, there were concentration camps established and opened, and in these concentration camps, there were 23,000 people who were interned. And later, in the next few years following that, via various measures, for example, a ban to study at the university, or people were shot at the border if they tried to flee to Greece or Turkey, or people were imprisoned. There were about something like 2,000 Bulgarian citizens who were victims of this communist regime. At the end of this regime, the victims of the communist system were the Bulgarian Turks. There was an attempt to, as a minority, to completely eliminate them. They were to receive Bulgarian names, they were shot, they were forced to flee to Turkey, and this was in 1989. This was a wave which affected 300,000 people. And what happened later then? In the other post-communist countries, the secret police archives were opened in the 90s, but in Bulgaria there was an attempt to do so. The government, well, democratic forces in the government promulgated a law at the end of the 90s, and then the archives were opened. But later, we had another government, and the Prime Minister established a party, and we hoped that it would be liberal. Nonetheless, a law was passed, issued from this party, and the archives were closed again. And even our Prime Minister, Tasa, he expressed a wish that a general from the former state security be taken as a consultant, be taken on as an advisor. And later on, under pressure from the European Parliament in 2006, and this was very important, that is, that this house turned to Bulgaria, helped Bulgaria to begin to cope with its communist past. Because the Greens and also the European People's Party offered support, and also other MEPs offered support through a resolution to further progress in Bulgaria for entry into the Union, and they demanded that these archives be opened again. And therefore, in 2006, another law was promulgated and confirmed by the Bulgarian Assembly. But what happened later? We don't receive any education about communism in Bulgaria. There's very little in school books and in the government, and now that the archives have been opened again, we've seen that ever since 1989, about 130 MEPs were former members or officers of the Communist State Security Services, and today 17 of such members of the Bulgarian Parliament are former members of the state security. Our president is a former member of the state security, a former president. And also one of the MEPs here in the European Parliament is a former agent of the state security at that time. If I were to say that a former Gestapo man were a member of the European Parliament, you'd probably throw me out and say this is impossible. But this is Bulgarian reality, and therefore we are such wholehearted supporters of this European platform, because in Bulgaria there is no serious state-pursued policies for research into our communist past, and only through common work with others, cooperation with other authorities and other institutes which are occupied with this subject, can we in our country make progress. We have people who work actively, but European cooperation on this subject is of prime importance for us.
Thank you very much, colleague Katrinov. And we can see that from different contributions from different parts of Europe, the same pattern is to be seen, namely how totalitarian communism started with mass arrests and executions, like it was mentioned about Romania, about Bulgaria. But this reminds me a well-known British historian who says that during the first 10 post-war years, only in Central and Eastern Europe, except Baltic states and the Soviet Union, about 1 million people were killed or executed. I think this is a surprise for our friends in Western Europe. 1 million people killed in Europe, liberated by the Soviet totalitarianism. so that the Nazi concentration camps couldn't accommodate the new prisoners, and new camps had to be built immediately. And now it's my special pleasure to pass the word on to Nicholas Werth from Institute for Contemporary History.
Merci. Oui à l'Europe, mais nous y entrerons avec nos morts. Ces mots.
Yes to Europe, but we'll come in with our habits. These were the words of a Polish thinker, which has lots to do with the Eastern European people.
Rapprochement historique franco-allemand.
This celebrates the virtues of reconciliation, stability of borders and the democratic political institutions, prosperity and glorious vision. This vision of history has promoted certain memories, a sort of European renaissance consecrated to the victory over Nazism and the monstrous regression of the genocide of the Jews in Europe, and maintaining alive the crimes of Nazism subsumed under the word Holocaust has been affirmed for some years as a political and educational major element in Europe. But the European Union over the last few years, has it taken sufficient account of the immense consequences of this in the various memorials considering the collapse of communism in Eastern Europe? With the accession of the ex-communist countries, the memorial problems have resurged in the enlarged space of the European Union. The new member countries of the Union have given us the challenge of facing their heritage, the heritage of communism and Soviet domination over half a century. So in this work on memory, we continue to not properly recognize this, and we see the crimes of Nazism, the crimes of communism, and the French Soviet expert Alain Besançon recognized this with the publication of the Black Book on Communism. I was one of the co-authors, and I think that this comparison is still up to date. We realize that there is this forgetfulness that people have not really remembered, particularly when we consider the long revolution which have the history, and when we look back at the short term, we must think of the Nazi occupation and Stalingrad, and all of this has created a type of society in French society. And when we think of Soviet communism, the genocide famine of 1932-33 in the Ukraine with thousands of victims, the terror in the late 30s, and Katyn and the extermination of the Polish elite, the deportation of thousands of Poles from the Baltic countries, also in 40, 41, 48, 49, and the forced labor of hundreds of thousands of purple peoples in the camps in Romania, in Bohemia, Ostrava, Moravia, in Bulgaria, just to mention a few among many others. All of these mass crimes are not really recognized, are not really known by most of the citizens in Western Europe. However, the extreme violence of this dark continent, which Europe has been in the 20th century, this is what Mark Matsoa referred to Europe as, the dark continent, and things didn't stop in 1945 with the collapse of National Socialism. It is true that after the death of Stalin, as Václav Havel said, the inequalities, however, still continued, and torture rooms were not really deserted even after Stalin's death. For long decades, totalitarianism of real socialism continued. Death, I'm quoting Václav Havel, therefore it moved from observable facts to into the shadows, and therefore this was a strange denial of what was going on, this collective murdering which was continuing, this long and slow degeneration under communism, the absence of sensational stories which could be used by the international press because of what was happening behind the shadows, with the exception of Budapest and Prague, certainly can furnish a central element so as to understand the indifference of Western European citizens to the crimes of communist totalitarianism which were perpetrated over this long period, where in the West they were experienced prosperity. In this new Europe of the 27, the memory of West and East are not common, and we must see to it that these two halves of Europe, which have been separated by the Iron Curtain, come together. Let us not forget that the conflicts of the 20th century in Central and Western Europe have affected so many of the population, have overturned national identities, cultural and ethnic identities, confiscated and held occult over decades during the socialist period, and deportations, expulsions, national conflicts have resurfaced with liberty and democracy. The past has become a source of revelation incorporated into the present so as to maintain resentment, the ethnic resentment which had existed before totalitarianism has resurged. At the first opportunity, the guns were taken out, and the global condemnation of communism sometimes favored polarized visions, the examples of nuances from the past, binary categories and stereotype figures of criminals and victims. In condemnation of communism, we must carry out a very cautious examination of the post-communist era and how to examine the past. A solemn condemnation of genocides, crimes against humanity, war crimes committed by the two major totalitarian systems in the 20th century is necessary and indispensable so as to render homage to the victims, particularly to remember them and remember those in the East and in the West, and inform generations for the future of what abominable crimes have been perpetrated by certain regimes, so as to be able to keep the memory of the victims. So as to make this efficient, we must have as much historical transparency as possible without anything covered by shadow. Let us try to construct or reconstruct an individual identity and collective identity based not only on victimization. We must open the doors to understanding this properly. Simply looking at victimization will not lead to true historic understanding of what has happened in the 20th century, nor will it lead to sustainable development among peoples. Thank you.
Merci beaucoup.
Thank you very much.
A clear message, and we really appreciate your role as a co-author of the Black Book of Communism, and also for mentioning Alain Besançon, who is one of the, has provided us with the shortest possible concentration and comparison of different totalitarian systems of the 20th century. Just yesterday I met with Commission President Barroso, whom I gave this book 3 months ago, and he expressed his gratitude. He has read this book, and I think this is a very, very good message that our top politicians have become more interested in these topics. And now it's my pleasure to give the floor to Camilla Andersson from Sweden, Institute for Information on the Crimes of Communism, who has her personal story, how she got experience about the heritage of communism. Please, Camilla.
Thank you. I'm pleased to be here with you at the gathering, so many people from all over Europe, especially this symbolically important year. This year we commemorate the liberation of Central and Eastern Europe and the Baltic State from almost half a century of communist terror, occupation, oppression, environmental destruction, and poverty. When the countries of Europe today strive for democracy, cooperation, security, and peace, this urge towards creating a new, better, and united Europe is being spurred not only by these noble goals of democracy, cooperation, and open societies, but also of the terrible experience of Europe's totalitarian past, of totalitarianism, racism, militarism, war, genocide, and destruction. The vision of Europe, based on inclusion rather than confrontation, on solidarity rather than major powers versus smaller states, on common security rather than realpolitik, and of celebration of core value of European culture is a noble one. But in order to reach these goals, we need to be vigilant against resource of the destructive forces which have plagued our continent. Knowledge of history is one of the fundamental building blocks where we build a new united Europe together. We can now fly anywhere we like, we can work where we want, but if we continue to deny fundamental parts of European history, then the future Europe will carry within its very seeds of totalitarianism, divisions, and conflicts. I would like to quote from the introduction of the Prague Declaration of European Conscience and Communism by the Senate of the Parliament of Czech Republic. Bearing in mind the dignified and democratic future of our European home, where society that neglect the past have no future, where Europe will not be united unless it's able to reunite its history. In order to truly achieve the reunification of Europe, we need to understand and respect each other. We need to learn from experiences of totalitarian systems. And the long struggle for regained freedom, we have shaped the lives of million people in half the European continent until very recently. In order to learn the lesson of European totalitarian past, we need to learn from those who were forced to experience it. Tomorrow's European citizens are the young people of today. They form their views of Europe and the world, or form the information which surrounds them. This basic knowledge will directly affect the decisions they will make and the choices they will make of the Europe tomorrow. Those choices won't always be easy ones. Democracy and openness are not easy, they are hard. They demand our knowledge, our attention, our vigilance, and commitment to value and principles. The tragedies of colonialism, the horrors of the Inquisition, the religious and imperialistic wars have swept our continent so many times, of injustice of slavery, serfdom, unacceptable social conditions of the aggressive and genocide national socialist totalitarianism, contrasted by the Enlightenment and the struggle for democracy, liberty, gender and race equality, and for social change. These are all important events which from now integral parts of school curriculums and the public debate of films and books and those of understanding of European history and European identity. So what do young people in Europe know today of recent European history and the communist past? Instead of speculating about this, I would like to talk about some facts. Concerning the knowledge of history among young people in my country, Sweden, communism was an ideological backbone of brutal totalitarian dictatorship which claimed the millions of innocent people's lives and destroyed the dreams, hope, and loves of countless ones. It is a system which has generated human rights violations, misery, suffering, poverty, war, and mass murder on a scale unparalleled in world history. Yet somehow, knowledge of these horrific crimes is still not an integral part of European identity. The realities of the Holocaust and the hateful and twisted ideology behind it with all of us, in the faces of the victims, in their name, in their eyes of photograph, in films and books, through memorials and remembrance, and by respect, emotion, understanding, and identification with their stories that have left us fills us with. They were our fellow human beings, and they still talk to us through the distance of time. In contrast, the realities of the crimes of communists are not real at all. The tens of millions of victims of communism are faceless, marked only by their absence and by their silence, their untold suffering still literally untold. When I went to school, the school book map of our region, the Baltic Sea area, was cut in half. The western side of the Baltic Sea, there were real countries with places and names, borders, cities, identities, culture and flags. On the eastern and southern side of the Baltic Sea map, the map was blank, sparsely detailed. The countries and the people on it on the other side were given no mention in my history books, at schools, nor I never heard of them on TV, in newspapers or in films or in books. They were simply not there. They just didn't exist. The crimes of communism were given no mention. If communism was mentioned at all in school or in media, it was rather a quite positive or forgiving context. I mentioned facts. As part of our work in the ICC, in 2007, we commissioned a statistic nationwide survey among Swedish students concerning the knowledge of recent history, of basic facts about our neighboring countries and then the crimes of communism. Allow me to present you brief an overview of the finding of the survey. 90% of the 1,004 Swedes in the age of 15 to 20 that the Polling Institute Demoscope surveyed nationwide, they had never heard of Gulag. By contrast, 95% of the children were well informed about the Holocaust. Some key findings of this survey were: 43% believe the communist regime has claimed less than 1 million lives worldwide in the past century. One-fifth of those surveyed put the death toll to communists at 1 to 10,000. 40% believe that communists have contributed to increased prosperity in the world. 22% consider communists to be a democratic form of government. And 82% did not recognize Belarus as a dictatorship. The survey also included questions about geography. Here, only half of the respondents were aware that Berlin was the capital of a country on the Baltic Sea. Even fewer were aware that Warsaw was one such capital, despite both Germany and Poland being only a short ferry trip from Sweden. 90% did not know which foreign country was closest to Stockholm. It's Tallinn in Estonia. This finding immediately sparked a firestorm of debate on all levels of Swedish society. Many members of the parliament demanded urgent school reform, and the ministers of education and culture promised concrete measures to improve education. Sweden Foreign Minister Carl Bildt described surveys truly frightening and remarked that the lack of knowledge was massive. The publication of the result triggered an unprecedented firestorm of debate of history in Sweden on all levels, from internet to local communities to leading newspapers to parliamentary debates. The change, the school curriculum, where the teaching of crimes of communism is now mandatory in Swedish schools. The fury debate even spread to some neighboring countries like Norway, where the survey was replicated with similar results. So we do have numbers. They do speak for themselves. In order to change this statistic, we need to make the millions of silence of victims of communism come alive. We must let them speak to us, and we must listen and learn. We must allow them to finally tell us their stories. We must learn from their terrible facts, and we must understand how this, one of the greatest atrocities in the human history, can come to pass. We must learn as much as we can from its victims in order to both pay our long overdue respect and to safeguard our future from other and future form of totalitarianism, hate, intolerance, and simple solutions. We must learn to identify and recognize the poison of totalitarian, helpful, anti-human ideologies, and we must reject the barbaric notion that kills of certain groups of people motivated by certain ideologies can ever be justified. It has now been 20 years since the fall of the Iron Curtain and the liberation of the Baltic Republics, Eastern and Central Europe, from communist dictatorship and occupation. When the process of European reintegration and reunification began, the hope was not only liberty, security, and material reconstruction of society. The hope was also for recognition and respect as fellow Europeans with unique voices, culture, and history. It has now been 20 years since the golden opportunity to form a new Europe arose, and still Europe is in many senses a divided continent. In order to create a truly united democratic new Europe, we can look to a different, brighter future. We cannot condemn one evil totalitarian system while simultaneously allowing the million of victims of others to stay unrecognized and unmentioned. Doing so strips us of the dignity and civilization we aspired to have achieved. The widespread knowledge of the crimes of national socialism did not occur spontaneously or by chance. It's a result of dogged, concentrated efforts when individuals, writers, journalists, publishers, filmmakers, institutions, NGOs, and governments throughout the world, and it's taken unswerving conviction and hard-focused work, as they did in Sweden. Much needs to be done if we want to raise the level of awareness of the crimes of communism and its victims. We consider the following to be some of the first steps needed to be taken in an international cooperative effort in this process. The carrying out of a pan-European survey concerning the crimes of totalitarianism and the level of knowledge of Europe and its recent history. From this result of survey, teaching material can be produced, tailored to the needs and findings of the survey, containing basic facts and personal stories. The founding of independent institutions and platform for the specific study of totalitarianism and totalitarian regimes, such as the proposed platform of European memory and conscience. The providence of resources and funds for outreach and education concerning totalitarian ideology and the real-life effects. The establishment of a European Day of Remembrance of the Victims of Communism, and establishing of permanent monuments to the victims of communism all over the world. Even though speaking on the theme as horrible as the crimes of communism, I would nevertheless like to end on a positive note. From our experience in schools and among journalists, politicians and media, we have been met not with complacency, lack of interest or ignorance, but quite the opposite. We have encountered a lot of curiosity, a thirst of knowledge, and a great moral engagement. Especially students see this subject as a very important once they are presented with facts and stories. In our opinion, this bodes well for a future together. People want to know. Just let them a chance to to let them know. It's long overdue, and it's our duty to the young people of today and to the coming generations. Thank you.
Tack så mycket, Camilla. You heard very, very telling story about inequality of information and also about the positive example Sweden has provided to introduce this topic into the schools and so to develop mutual respect and the recognition that would lead to reconciliation and all European perception of our history. I would like to thank all panelists for their discipline. And also may I remind you that conclusions of today's hearings are there, down on the table to be signed by every participant. We would very much like to ask you to do this if you would agree with these conclusions. Some may leave before the hearing is over, so please don't leave without signing it. And may I just add one information, namely, hopefully in 2 weeks' time, a new contribution to our common history about communist totalitarianism will be introduced. That will be so-called Book of Ten, or Reuniting Europe, a book published by the EPPED parliamentary group of the European Parliament, and that book will tell the stories of 10 post-communist countries, now member states of the European Union, how totalitarian dictatorship was established, about the victims, resistance, regaining democracy and uniting and joining the European Union. So we'll let you know, but we hope that this book will be introduced here in Brussels in the same building during the last week of March, if all goes well. It has been sent for the printing, and the number of copies will be 10,000 in English. The main target group will be our friends in Western Europe. I think we know something about each other, but the idea to start this book was a realization that we know very little about each other's experiences, about Estonians, about Bulgarians and Hungarians, about Germans or whatever, but we need to have this common approach. And now it's time, some time for exchange of views, but first I would like to return to colleague Oprea, who wanted to share his time with his colleague.
I want to say something about, because I forget to tell you about our experience in matter of the education. Our institute published last year a school book, and now that school book is in more than 200 schools, and from that year will be in all the country. It's a history of the communist regime in Romania. It's very important to pay the attention on the education. And finally, I want to thank you for the to the EPM Laszlo Tökös, who had the initiative to put us together in Bucharest, many institutions and organizations, and to have our contribution to the Prague Declaration. Thank you. Sorin Ilieșiu is also invited to at our debate. And,
okay. I'll give you the floor first.
Merci beaucoup, monsieur. Je m'appelle Sorin.
Thank you very much. I'm Sorin Leschion. I'm from Romania. I'm vice president of the Civic Alliance, created about 20 years ago. A large part of the civil society in Romania has recently called upon the European Parliament, and this has been signed by 250 intellectuals, 40 civic and trade union organizations, 500 former political prisoners of Romania. Our appeal has been signed by Vladimir Bukovsky, the most important symbol of the anti-communist right, Mr. Stefan Courtois, the Black Book on Communism, and a number of other authorities. I should like to briefly sum up this document or this appeal, which has been addressed to the European Parliament. The title is Appeal for Condemnation of Communism in the European Parliament According to the Romanian Model and for the Condemnation of the Hitler-Stalin Pact. We request that this year, 20 years after the fall of communism and 70 after the Hitler-Stalin Pact, that the European Parliament condemn the communist regime and the Hitler-Stalin Pact. The condemnation of the communist regime must follow the example of the condemnation of the communist regime in Romania, that is, the connection between criminality and the illegitimacy of the communist regimes in these countries. In 2006, following the appeal of civil society, the communist regime of Romania was condemned as illegitimate and criminal by the president and the parliament, following the report for the analysis of the communist dictatorship in Romania. This commission was presided by Mr. Vladimir Kispanianu. He should have been here as well. And with the exception of Romania, no other communist country has condemned its communist regime in such a conclusive report, which is incontestable, an analysis of 670 pages worked through by more than 40 authors, the majority of whom experts in the area. A number of personalities from Romania, and measures have been posed by the Presidential Commission in the conclusion of the report, condemnation of communism, work on memoirs, justice, research of the archives, and education. I would ask you to take a look at this report. This is a world premiere, and this occurred in 2006 in Romania, as the condemnation of communism by virtue of an agreement that has been possible in a country like Romania, which has endured a communist-Stalinist regime until its end, and therefore there were a few years of neo-communism afterwards, and we thought that what has been possible in Romania may also be possible at international level. Therefore, in 2006, we have launched an appeal for international condemnation of communism by virtue of conclusive reports in each country. I wish to reiterate that we request the competent international bodies to demand the former communist countries to elaborate their own reports on the communist crimes in their countries. International condemnation must be carried out in perfect knowledge of what has occurred, given a basis of such reports, so that the entire world knows the entire truth about the communist crimes, because this otherwise would not be possible. In 2006, the Declaration of Prague has been published, a declaration of historic importance, and in Romania we immediately requested the adoption of it by the Romanian Parliament in the proclamation for decommunization of Romania. But unfortunately, the Parliament has changed, and we are simply waiting for the new Parliament in Romania to do that. We request that the European Parliament submit to a vote the following proposals. 1. The adoption of the demands contained in the following document. A. The Lindblad Resolution of the Council of Europe. B. The Appeal for the International Condemnation of Communism. C. The Declaration of Prague.
Prague Declaration. The condemnation of the Hitler Stalin, the Hitler-Ribbentrop Pact in 1939, as well as the consequences thereof, legitimate and criminal consequences in the spirit of the Declaration of Prague. Four, the condemnation of communist regimes as illegitimate and criminal by virtue of these reports prepared by each country on their own communist regime. Five, presentation by the 7th of November 2009, that is this year, by each of these former communist countries who are now members of the European Union to present their own report on the criminality of their own communist regimes. Six, the condemnation the 7th of November this year by the European Parliament of communist regimes as illegitimate and criminal by virtue of the conclusive reports from each country within the framework of a conference organized in Bucharest, I'm suggesting the capital of my country, where Ceausescu was the last Stalinist in Europe. We proposing to the participants that they visit the memorial to communism, Siget, in Transylvania, and also the memorial of Elie Wiesel, the Nobel Prize winner who was born in Romania. He is one of the survivors of Holocaust and is still alive. We are proposing a seminar in Romania on the condemnation of Nazism and communism in the spirit of the Prague Declaration. Seven, the creation of a commission within the European Parliament for the establishment of a summary report on criminality and illegitimacy of communism by virtue of these country reports. Eight, the admission to the European Union only of those countries who have condemned the communist regimes in their own countries. Nine, the recommendation to the Council of Europe that the former communist states members who are not members of the European Union condemn the communist regimes in their own countries as illegitimate and criminal by virtue of their reports, just as Romania has done before having been admitted to the European Union. 10. The adoption by the European Parliament of measures for decommunization assumed by the President of Romania, also proposed by the final report of the Commission Puzanciol for the analysis of the communist dictatorship. A, the adoption of the anti-communist illustration, political condemnations and indemnization of victims in common graves, and recompensation for anti-communist combatants and for former political prisoners. The law for the reduction to a minimum of the pension of those responsible for communist crimes. In other words, former communist activists to reduce their pensions to a minimum, and former directors and torturers of the communist political police, and also people who belong to the Communist Home Ministry. F, the opening of the Communist Archives and Neo-Communist Archives, because in Romania we had Neo-Communism, which was very serious. G, the revelation of the truth during the pre-communist, communist, and neo-communist period in school books. That is, so children know that study of communism and the Holocaust is not an option.
We could copy your document and distribute it among participants, because we need to cut you short. Yes, but let's stop on this point. And may I give floor? Yes. May we all congratulate you with this book and your achievements. Now, we have very limited time. Some participants have indicated about their wish to take the floor. Emanuel Zinger would like for 1 minute, then I'll name you. I'll give floor to colleague Vladislav Bulhak, colleague Mart Lahr, from Estonia, colleague Georgi Schöpflin from Hungary, and you indicated too, yes. Then we'll see. I'm afraid we are very short of time, but please, Emmanuelis.
Yes, thank you, Tina. Mr. Kellam, I think the idea to have in our own parliaments the official resolution supporting Czech Prague Declaration, it's a very good idea. In fact, actually, 2 weeks ago, I brought to my parliament procedures Czech resolution, and it's pending. And I think it's a very good idea to have support in the national parliament. So, coming back to the very little, the folkloristic description of communist regimes, I'm using this folkloristic, well, it's very broad. Actually, in my country, and possibly in the Baltic countries, it was not communist regimes. I would like to share this with my, with my Romanian friends. It was simple invasion from outside. We have almost not existing communist parties. And the product of communism was not our product. It was invasion for 50 years who ended in the 90s when we reestablished our independence. And when a few days ago the Council of Europe mentioned by you, and I belong to this body, was trying to consider how to remember the 60th year of anniversary of the Council of Europe values, Human Rights Declaration and so on. So the project was last Friday to bring Mr. Gorbachev to make him only one main speaker. So my objection was to bring Václav Havel, Lech Walesa, and to bring Landsbergis. So in this case, I think we should understand that this communist wording, the phraseology of communists, actually can be from time to time misleading us. In the case of the Baltic, it was simple invasion from outside, from Moscow. Thank you.
And colleague Bulhak, please.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. And thank you for inviting the Institute of National Remembrance to present its position at the hearing. I have honor to speak here on behalf of the president of the Institute, Professor Janusz Kurtyka. And firstly, I would like to declare that the Institute of National Remembrance fully endorses the idea of the platform of European memory and conscience, whatever form it finally takes on. I think that the platform should be based on two interrelated pillars, research and education. It seems also necessary to make good use of existing experience of my institute and other brotherly institutions presented here from other European countries. That means also the stress on the importance of the keeping the archives open, no matter how difficult it is. Remembering and commemorating the victims' fate is also very important. It's our duty, and it's beyond the questions, but it's also our duty to study mechanisms and judge the ideologies, systems of power or geopolitical concepts that made genocide, ethnic cleansing, and other crimes committed by both systems imaginable, possible, and finally welcomed by the wide groups of people. Without this, we cannot expect the future decision makers to take lessons from the past. And this, after all, is the most important goal of the platform. Thank you very much.
Dziękuję bardzo. Colleague Matlar, one of the authors of the book of Reuniting Europe.
Thank you. Chairman, first of all, I really want to thank Czech Presidency and you and all other organizers of this event because it's enormously important to bring us together. Because when we really want to condemn the communist crimes, we can do this only together. To unite all our forces from the similar organizations around the globe, not only even in Europe, because the communism has committed the same crimes everywhere. The communism has killed the people, tortured people, deported people everywhere. And it's a lot of more powerful when we talk to our school children, to our people, not only on the crimes which were committed against our nation, but on the crimes which committed on other nations too, because then the story becomes significantly more clear. And again, the symbols are important, so I support all the declarations and so which are there on the floor for signing, and especially I think this year of remembrance, which where we are now, because there are two important events in Europe. First of all, Europe was divided by Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact. That's the first case, and with all the results, attack against Poland, attack against the Baltic countries, attack against Finland, and so on, so on. We were divided from this moment. And then we can celebrate at the same time the year of reunification. This is the year of remembrance. Let's make it all European anniversary. Let's make it together, because only together we can do this. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And our colleague, Georgi Schöpflin, also one of the authors of the book of Reunification of Europe.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you very much to the Czech Presidency for this entire initiative. I'd just like to say that I expect to play a not inconsiderable role in the Hungarian Presidency in 2011, and we will continue the work and hope to hand the baton over to Poland in the second half of 2011. I want to go back, I'm going to be very brief, I want to go back to your opening words about the work that we have done here and the difficulties that we have had, let's say, interesting our Western colleagues. And I've been thinking about why. And I think there are a number of consequences of the lack of interest, the uninterest by the West in the kind of work that we're doing. One of the consequences, it seems to me, is that it conveys a message that the West regards the former communist states and the crimes of the communists as not particularly serious. It's a kind of irrelevance. It gets in the way of everyday business. In other words, there's a lack of respect. There's lack of sense of equality between West and East from this particular perspective. The second problem is that of consistency. Communist crimes are seen as less significant than Nazi crimes. That problem is seriously erosive of mutual respect. Third problem, of course, is that it creates a sense of injustice. And that injustice eats away at social coherence and at the same time eats away at East-West relations. And finally, of course, there is the inequality that results from all this, which in the medium term, and indeed to some degree in the short term, is already beginning to undermine respect for democracy, human rights, and promote cynicism. And finally, on a footnote, if I may be permitted to say something to Mr. Altendorf, and the point he made about the memory of dictatorship, I think it's very appropriate that it's the Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact that we are choosing as the day. Because after all, we all tend to forget that Stalin and the aid that he gave Hitler in the 1930s, indeed up to 1941, was a necessary condition for German rearmament and for Hitler's aggressiveness. Without the support of the Soviet Union, that wouldn't have happened. Stalin was Hitler's best ally, oh, until 1941, until Operation Barbarossa. We tend to forget this.
Kösönöm szépen. Georgi. And last speaker, please.
My name is Ulrich Mählert
from the Federal DDR, to work on the DDR research. We have been preparing for this platform, and it is absolutely necessary with reference to studying the communist dictatorship crimes and also opposition to the communist dictatorship. And if I launch this appeal today, and if I cannot yet sign it, it is because the initiative, from my point of view, has something wrong with it from the very outset, because it wishes to create a platform, and I share the view of my colleague Altendorf, a platform to be created, which is to serve for the fascist dictatorship and the communist dictatorships. I think that this initiative is from the point of view of my foundation, is something too early. All discussions have shown that there is a great deal to make up in terms of studying communism. There is no consensus in Europe on the crimes of communism, and at the present point in time, to start an initiative to create an institution which is to be responsible for both totalitarian movements is doomed to failure, because this initiative has, as far as fascism is concerned, there have been working on it for decades on end, and now you simply cannot integrate something which is so fairly recent. I think this initiative in its present form, with a claim to cover all totalitarian regimes in Europe, is not going to be successful. And in the last analysis, to only speak of communism, it will simply be doomed to failure. I think it's tragic in the 20th century to have to say this. Thank you.
Thank you for your contribution. But I have to delay all reactions to the next session, except Gisela Kallenbach. She asked for a tiny limited reaction.
Das ist sehr nett, weil es passt.
Thank you very much, because this fits right in. I want to thank you very much for having organized the hearing today. And also, the active participation illustrates that we must do a great deal more, because I have the impression that there is so much information which has been dammed up. It's not sufficient to treat this in simply 2 or 3 hours. I wish to strongly underscore that this is a task for all people of goodwill, and not only for the Social Democrats or the Conservative Party groups in this House, but perhaps we will gain the left as well, and also my party, the Greens. We also have hearings on the Prague Declaration, and perhaps there is just as great a resonance there, and therefore I wish to encourage you all to continue to participate in working on this subject. It is absolutely necessary, and we have these fine differences between Germany and the work being done in Middle and Central Europe.
Schönen Dank, Gisela. I think we are open to all factions, especially to the Greens. Welcome.
I think you just stressed the fact that these tensions exist, also psychological tensions. And I believe that it would be a good idea if this assembly were to send notes to all academic institutes in Europe who are occupied with the Holocaust. And I think it would be very good if this were also to be included in our papers, so that in future we would also have the cooperation of the most important Holocaust institutions. If you agree, then I think that would be a good idea.
Archulabai, and thank you very much for your dedication and interest. So coffee will be served outside, but will resume in 20 minutes at 5 o'clock.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.